One of the great promises of eternal inflation is that the predictions are independent of the initial conditions. Now, this is an optional feature. It's not compulsory that your theory of the early universe has this property, and it's not obvious that eternal inflation does have this property. But if it does, I think it's an attractive feature. I think it improves the predictivity of the theory, because you don't need to know what the initial conditions were in order to make predictions. And I think it's an aesthetically pleasing alternative to the project of trying to figure out what were the initial conditions. But whether it's true actually depends on two things. The first thing it depends on is what measure you put on eternal inflation. If you choose a measure that's easily impressed by space-time volume, then the regions of the universe that are eternally inflating will soon, because of their exponential expansion, come to dominate the regions of the universe that are not eternally inflating, and those regions will then forget their initial conditions. If, by contrast, you choose a measure that follows a geodesic along, maybe, then it will not have this feature. It's not impressed by space-time volume. The second thing it depends on is the question of whether the landscape is traversable. In other words, if you start off in one vacuum, can you reach every other vacuum? Or does the landscape break up into a whole bunch of islands, a whole bunch of super selection sectors that cannot communicate with each other? Because if it does, then we're going to need to know which of those islands we started off in order to know what predictions we should expect. And broadly speaking, the first thing I should say is the answer to this question is trivially no, unless I allow that the initial conditions, whatever they are, give some non-zero amplitude to be eternally inflating. So maybe I should say traversable from the sitter. Otherwise, we're going to get stuck in, say, the higher dimensional supersymmetric vacuum. In the literature, there have been a couple of challenges to this idea that the landscape might be traversable. And the first challenge has been a sort of specific challenge, where people have written down landscapes which they claim are not traversable, which cannot be traversed, and which you cannot get from one place to another. And I think all of the examples that exist essentially boil down to this one-dimensional field landscape. You have a de Sitter vacuum, say, A, here, and then you have a long ADS vacuum, B, and then you have another de Sitter vacuum, C, over here. And you want to know, if you start the universe off in A, can you make an enduring region of C? Is there any way to make, to imagine yourself, I was going to be a bit more ambiguous about which is higher here, can you make an enduring region of C that'll classically persist and grow? The second kind of challenge to this idea is somewhat less specific. It's just a general speculative concern that maybe we can't even expect this in the landscape. Maybe the whole landscape is itself disconnected. It's not even connected in the field sense. And if that were true, then we're going to have a really tough time traversing the landscape. And what I'm going to argue in my talk today is that we, in fact, have good reason to believe that the landscape is indeed traversable. I'm not going to argue that no landscape that looks like this appears no potential that looks like this appears anywhere in the string landscape, because I don't know enough about the string landscape to be able to make any statement like that with any degree of certainty. Instead, what I'm going to argue is that even if you started in A, even if such a potential did exist in the string landscape, one would still expect to be able to create an enduring region of C. And then I'm going to have a few speculative comments that, in fact, there seems evidence for a conjecture in quantum gravity that this situation is impossible. I should mention that my collaborator, Alex Dallin, sitting in the middle row there, and I'll also encourage you to ask questions. I'm giving a Blackboard talk, so questions are welcome. Okay, so first question, can you get from A to C? What I mean by getting from A to C is if you start off with the field in a field eigenstate at A, I guess, is it possible that at some time later the field will be in C classically, as in you can measure the field to be uniformly in C and that region of C will classically endure? And before I get on to the full question in the context of the landscape, I'm going to ask a slightly simpler question to increase the jeopardy, because in the slightly simpler context, it's not going to be possible to get from A to C. And the slightly simpler context I'm going to ask the question in is that of turning off gravity and asking in a fixed De Sitter space, in a fixed Minkowski space, is it possible, if the field starts off in A, to reach C? The first piece of bad news is that there is no instanton, there is no Coleman-style instanton that'll get you from A to C. And the way to see that is to remember that Coleman argued that the profile of the instanton is given by rolling a ball in the inverse potential. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry. If you do, you'll remember that the profile of the instanton is given by a ball rolling in minus V, and you have to roll a ball from A to C in the potential minus V. That's clearly impossible in this landscape, because there's a ginormous, what once you flip it over, is a hill in the way. So there is no instanton that'll get you directly from A to C. That's the first piece of bad news. The second piece of bad news is that a two-step process also will not work. You cannot get, you can tunnel first from A to B, but once you're in B, once you have a bubble of B that's grown, you cannot then, inside that bubble of B, nucleate a bubble of C, because up-tunneling is impossible in Minkowski space. That cannot be done. In fact, the situation is even somewhat more desperate than these two points would seem to suggest, for the following reason. It will occasionally happen that the field will fluctuate to having a bubble of C embedded in a background of A. This will occasionally happen, that there'll be such a fluctuation. But this fluctuation does not classically endure. It is indeed the case that this bubble of C, the bubble wall, which runs through and is B somewhere in the middle as it interpolates from A to C, that bubble wall will in fact expand outwards into A. However, it'll also expand inwards. And this is the problem. In fact, what's going to happen is the field in the center of the bubble that's sitting at the value B is going to push out on both halves of the walls of this bubble, and you're going to get a band of B that's then going to grow and consume both the true and the false vacuum. Yes? They don't in Minkowski space, because in Minkowski space, it's absolutely, you would never create, you could create a region of C, it would then collapse again. They also won't in the full case that I'm going to consider because of the way I drew the potential. There are some potentials. Maybe I'll get onto that later, but I'll tell you the answer now. There are some potentials so that bubble collisions will help. Had I drawn this maybe much narrower, bubble collisions might have helped. But if you draw it wide enough, then bubble collisions can't help you, which is why I drew it like that. I was trying to make the situation as desperate as possible. Okay, so that's the answer in Minkowski space. There's no instanton, a two-step process won't work, and even if you just imagine that somehow by hand you made a bubble of C, it still would not classically endure. In Minkowski space, you cannot make it to C. The landscape is not traversable. And that's why I had to insist that we started off in a Minkowski background. Yes? Yeah? That's right. It's impossible to embed a bubble of C in A without a strip of V. Yeah. Yeah. So there's actually, if you imagine this bubble wall, there's sort of two segments to the bubble wall, this segment and this segment. And so now let's ask about this segment of the bubble wall. That's the segment of the bubble wall that's going to fly off inwards and consume C. That segment of the bubble wall has, in fact, two things, both of which are pointing in the same direction. It has the surface tension, which is trying to drag it in, and it has the pressure, which is trying to drag it in. So there's no question that it has to be wide enough in order that one of those is going to beat the other. Both of those are trying to make the bubble wall contract. Matt Johnson wrote nicely about this question in one of your papers. Yes. You're imagining messing with this potential? So I don't think it matters either to this argument or to the argument I'm going to make that you can, in fact, traverse the whole landscape. So I haven't been worrying about multiple scattering, and I don't think that's going to make any difference for the following reason. I'm trying to choose a potential that makes it as hard as possible for myself to get to C. And I'm trying to show that you can, in fact, even get to C in that one. It sounds like multiple scattering would only help me get to some distant minima. So I'm not going to include that case. Okay, I'm not totally sure what you have in mind, but maybe I'll give the argument, and then if you think the argument still applies to the argument I'm going to give, then I'll say it again. Yes, so that's in fact where I'm going with us, doing the full quantum mechanics. Any other questions? Okay, that's actually a nice segue to what I'm going to do next. I've done this in a fixed Minkowski space and decided you cannot get from A to C. Now I'm going to ask the same question again in standard non-relativistic quantum mechanics. Instead of imagining phi as a field variable, I'm just going to imagine phi as the position of some particle moving in a one-dimensional quantum mechanical potential. If I started off at A, if I measure it at A, can I later measure it at C? And if I measure it at C, will it classically persist there? The answer to that question is clearly yes in the case of quantum mechanics. A very quick way to say that is that the Schrodinger equation is a diffusion equation with a property that started anywhere, it an infinitesimal time later, spreads out and has support everywhere, except at nodes, which I'll come back to in a moment. But that's not the way I actually want to say it. The way I want to say it is the following. The path integral tells you the amplitude to go from A to any other point. For example, from A to C. And the path integral is given by the sum over all the paths from A to C. Now, these are Lorentzian paths. I'm not going to talk about Euclidean paths today, which is the standard language we discuss tunneling in. I'm going to do the Lorentzian path integral, which is the sum over all Lorentzian paths that take you from A to C, and they're weighted by e to the I, the Euclidean action of those paths. There is manifestly a Lorentzian path that takes you from A to C, remembering it doesn't have to satisfy the equation of motion. For example, one that just moves with uniform velocity. That means, therefore, that there is a non-zero contribution to the amplitude to be at C, so that the whole sum is going to be not equal to 0 unless I get complete destructive interference. Unless all the different paths add up to 0. Complete destructive interference, if all the paths, even though there's non-zero contributions to it, add up to 0. And there's two things that can make that happen. One is if it's got to happen. One is if it's compulsory that C be 0. For example, it could be compulsory because there's some special symmetry that makes C 0, some special symmetry of the potential. Or it could be compulsory because the only paths that get you to C have infinite action. So that would be the case, for example, if I'd made that barrier infinitely high. And if all the paths have infinite action, then they don't just get cancelled by other sort of disparate paths. They, in fact, get cancelled by other paths that are arbitrarily close in path space, because an arbitrarily small change is going to make an infinite change in the action. Okay, so it can happen because it has to happen, and the only other way it can happen is if you get unlucky. The only other way it can happen is if you have nodes. And basically that is a measure zero set. In fact, it's a codimension two set, because the wave function is a map from configuration space to C, and the origin is where you have to be sitting. A codimension two point is where you have to be sitting if you want to get one of these nodes. So even if C happens to be sitting on a node, there'll be a point arbitrarily close to C that's not, and that's good enough for our purposes. So in quantum mechanics, you can get from A to C. You can, having started in A, create a classically enduring particle at C. So the question I want to ask today is the rate to get from A to C equal to 0, or is it not equal to 0? Measure 0, I wouldn't want either. Well, I would say that is. I mean, basically what you're doing, even in the standard approach to instantons, is you're calculating the WKB tail of the wave function out there and calculating the overlap with the false vacuum. So these are all non-perturbative tail effects. If you want to ask me what the rate of these processes are, you can ask me again at the end. Yes. I guess for the purposes of my talk, I do not need to distinguish. I can say that I just require that they be non-zero. How long do I have? 11 minutes. Okay, so one thing follows immediately from the fact that it is possible to get from A to C in quantum mechanics. And that thing is that if I do ask this question again in a finite periodic box, if I make a finite periodic box and put a quantum field theory in this finite periodic box, it means that I can get from A to C in that configuration too. And the reason that you know that that's got to be true is that you can consider just the zero mode of this quantum field theory in a finite periodic box, the homogeneous mode, and that zero mode obeys a Schrodinger equation. In fact, so the result follows immediately from quantum mechanics, that the zero mode can tunnel from A to C, and that is all you need in order to get the whole box into C. Of course, as the box grows to be infinitely large, the mass of that in the quantum mechanics problem and the potential in the quantum mechanics problem both go to infinity. So when the box becomes infinitely large, all the actions go to infinity, and you once again get complete destructive interference and recover the Minkowski result. But for any finite size of the box, I guess I can put a tick there now. For any finite size of the box, you can tunnel, you can create an enduring region of C. The problem in the Minkowski space is that you couldn't make a bubble of C that was large enough that it would classically endure. But in a box, of course, you can. In a box, you just need to make the bubble as large as the box, and then it'll classically endure. And that is tremendously good news for the problem that we're actually interested in, which is that of tunneling in a dynamical gravity. Because it's going to turn out that we only need to make a finite-sized region of C, and then eternal inflation will do the rest. We only need to make a finite-sized region of C, and then the exponential expansion will ensure that it's going to classically endure. I think, Matt, yesterday you called that too big to fail, which is the right description. Another encouraging thing about this box is it says that this actually wasn't quite as big a constraint as we perhaps thought it was. In order to have a non-zero amplitude to eternally inflate, we only require that the initial conditions be specified on a compact surface. And that is enough, that is a sufficient condition right there to have a non-zero amplitude to eternally inflate. Okay, so now let's do the problem. Let's consider the full landscape, including dynamical gravity, as in I'm turning gravity back on, having turned it off for the purposes of this talk up to now. And we have the same problems we did in Minkowski space, that there is no Coleman-Deluccia-style instanton that'll get you from A to C. There's no Coleman-Deluccia-style instanton that'll get you directly from A to C. And, once again, this process, this two-step process, won't work. You tunnel from A to B. Now, B is now an infinite ADS space inside the bubble, and you cannot up-tunnel from B to C. In fact, worse than that, B is going to end up crunching. However, despite these two discouraging facts, do not despair. We can, in fact, get from A to C. And the reason is essentially to do with this statement here. All we need to do is find a Lorentzian path of finite action that contributes to the path integral that intercalates from a horizon size of A to a horizon size of C, and then the horizon size region of C is going to classically endure. I will now describe one such path. We need a whole horizon size to make it over to C so that it doesn't suffer this fate. In fact, for ease of description, I'm going to describe the whole thing in terms of a O4 symmetric state, a complete spherically symmetric homogeneous state in which the whole throat of De Sitter uniformly tunnels at once from A to C. And I want to find such a Lorentzian path that takes me from A to C. Now, the problem is that not all paths contribute to the path integral. In quantum mechanics, they all contributed. Here we have a Hamiltonian constraint. So to deal with the Hamiltonian constraint, we need to ensure that all, well, if we ensure, if we find a path that obeys this Hamiltonian constraint, that obeys the Friedmann equation, even if it doesn't obey the scalar field equation, then it's going to contribute to the path integral. There are a huge number of such paths. In order to keep the action finite, we want to ensure that A is well-behaved and finite. But it's clear that we can do that just by keeping phi dot squared big enough. By making phi dot the uniform velocity of this field large enough, we can keep A dot, we can keep this whole quantity positive so that it keeps expanding, but we can also keep it finite. In fact, let me describe one particular... Yeah. About 5 minutes. Let me describe one particular path, Lorentzian path, that's going to get me from A to C. I'm going to choose this path because it's got a very sort of clear physical interpretation. It's got a very clear physical interpretation because I'm going to get all the quantum behavior in at the start. I'm just going to give it a big quantum kick, which will violate the phi equations of motion, but that's fine. It doesn't need to obey the phi equation of motion to make it into the path integral. It just needs to obey the Hamiltonian constraint. So if I give the whole field a uniform kick, a uniform phi dot, that's pretty small, it'll just oscillate around A. If I give it a uniform kick that's somewhat bigger, the whole field, the whole horizon volume, will ride up and come to rest at the top of the barrier. If I give it an absolutely huge initial kick, the whole field will ride up... Sorry, if by the way, it comes to rest at the top of the barrier, contributes to the amplitude for the Hawking-Moss process, where the whole field over a horizon volume evaporates to the top of the barrier. If, however, I give it an even larger kick, homogeneous kick, the whole field will ride over A, over the barrier, through B, and to see. And indeed, it is easy to show that it does that all the while A stays finite, the whole action stays finite, and all the while all of the terms in the potential are sub-Planckian. Okay, so that is the argument that we can add a tick for this whole potential in the case of dynamical gravity, and there is, even though there's no instanton, even though semi-classical reasoning with instantons would appear to suggest that you cannot get from A to C, that there is indeed a non-zero amplitude to get from A to C, and that once in C, the field classically endures. Let me now just say some final words on this possibility. If the whole landscape was disconnected, if there were just two completely disconnected regions in phi, the process I've described clearly would not work. If it wasn't even connected in the sense of phi. However, I think there's reasonable evidence to be able to formulate a conjecture that in quantum gravity that does not happen. That in quantum gravity you never get the case that you have a region of field space that is just completely disconnected. And I think there's sort of three hints that that's a not unreasonable thing to think. The first hint comes from Coleman de Lucia bubbles again. In Coleman de Lucia, if you have A and B, and you want to ask what the tunneling rate is to go from A to B, and A is de Sitter, the tunneling rate is given by is governed by an instanton that interpolates between the two of them. As you take this barrier height very high, as you take the barrier height, in fact, infinitely high, what you do not find is that the Coleman de Lucia formula for the tunneling rate gives a zero rate. In fact, what happens is if you take the barrier infinitely high, the Coleman de Lucia formula stays non-zero, even as the barrier grows infinitely tall. The Coleman de Lucia formula, in fact, goes to the recurrence time of the A vacuum. Therefore, insofar as you can think of a disconnected landscape as really two regions of the landscape separated by an infinite barrier, Coleman de Lucia reasoning would appear to give us a hint that, in fact, you can still tunnel between these two. That would be another possibility, if indeed that process is possible. Well, it's all of the actual Coleman de Lucia instanton, in the case that the potential grows infinitely large, gets arbitrarily small. In fact, its action goes to zero. So it's a bit hard to see exactly what's going to happen, but what it looks like happening is that you, in the Hawking-Moss case, you nucleate a tiny, tiny, tiny little de Sitter space that's sitting at the top of the potential. Okay, and the other couple of comments I have are even more speculative. We have examples in string theory where it appears as though you have two regions of the landscape that are disconnected. For example, you have different topologies of your extra dimensions. But we know that, in fact, there are string theory processes that will connect those two regions of the landscape, these flop transitions. So that's perhaps another hint that, in fact, disconnected regions of the landscape can be connected. A final hint is that there seems to be good evidence for an equivalent conjecture, not for an equivalent conjecture, for a similar conjecture in when it comes to another superselection rule. In the standard model, conserves B minus L. But we know that non-perturbative quantum gravity effects don't. We know that you can make a black hole, throw a baryon in, and then have the black hole evaporate. And what that does is it does not respect any of the superselection sectors set up by global symmetries. That is a well-supported conjecture. Therefore, perhaps in a similar spirit, one might aspire that quantum gravity also does not respect any of the superselection sectors that one might set up in the landscape. Okay, and that's the end of my talk.
Okay, I will allow one really good question. Lenny says, never mind, I'm not going to ask my question. you can, all right, the best question, I should put a measure, yeah, the best question we have, you can ask.
That's correct, yeah. So in the formula for the decay rate in common dilution is that the decay rate is equal to e to the minus the Euclidean action of the instanton plus the Euclidean action you first thought of, plus the Euclidean action of the false vacuum. As the barrier becomes infinitely high, the instanton is just given by, well, in the Hawking-Moss case, it's given by a instanton perched atop the barrier. As that goes to infinitely high, the action of the instanton goes to zero. So the decay rate you're left over with is just e to the Euclidean action of the false vacuum, which is 1 over the recurrence time.